And I watched the documentary about when they made the song "We Are the World."
Heard about
Save
that?
Africa.
Oh, yeah.
I am interested in the story behind that.
Yeah.
How long is it?
How long is the documentary?
How long is the documentary?
Hour and 45.
I am not that interested. Okay. Like 15 minutes. Like that's my personal investment.
No, okay. But like, think about it. How many people were in the recording?
It's crazy.
Give each one 10 seconds.
Dan Aykroyd was in it.
My sister forwarded me some article. I don't know if it's in any way was connected with the documentary or using the documentary, but it was some quick little article read that somebody explains, like, why is Dan Aykroyd in We Are the World? Yeah. And it was this quick explanation because they were shooting it. His agent's office was in the same place where apparently that was all coming together. Uh-huh. And literally, he went to his agents to take care of something. Someone was like, hey, Dan. You're a blues brother.
I think it was still early in the process, too. They weren't sure who all they were going to get.
Yeah. Right?
So it was like, maybe we can get this person.
Fill
maybe
spot.
And they asked him, I think, before they did the big ask, because the way that the whole thing came together is trying to get everybody's schedule together is a nightmare.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And
of course.
And then they said, well, the American Music Awards are happening in Los Angeles in January. Everybody will be in town, so let's film it then.
Yeah.
And like literally the show was hosted by Lionel Richie, and he was one of the architects of putting the whole thing together.
And Bob Geldof?
Sort of. Bob Geldof did the song previously as where they all got together and they did the, what was it, the Christmas song?
Oh, that was him?
It's Christmas time at all. Yeah. This was sort of the response to it, and I don't know if it was Stevie Wonder who said it or it was Harry Belafonte, but one of them basically was saying, there's people dying in Africa, and we've got all these white folks saving us, but there are no black people that are doing anything about this right now.
Oh.
So it kind of started with Lionel Richie and Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson specifically,
yeah.
And then produced by Quincy Jones. But anyway, they were like, how do we get everybody's schedules together? Let's do it the same night as this. So Lionel Richie was hosting it, but also writing it. And so the AMAs ended at 10 o'clock at night. And I'm watching Keith's face because I know that I've only got 15 minutes here.
Yeah. No, this is perfect.
Yeah.
This tells me everything I need to know, and I don't have to sit down for an hour 45. Right.
That's our new podcast, Cliff Notes on Documentaries by
Craig
Ramey.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Craig got sick of watching the documentary. Let's learn some
I
stuff.
Would listen, yeah. Like 15-minute episodes and like just say what the documentary is. And like, we're going to give you the bullet points. Here's what you need to know.
We're not
going to pad this out with drone shots over the city.
What's interesting is
we
started this out talking about my octopus girlfriend or whatever that one's called.
My octopus teacher.
That's it. Sorry. And Keith doesn't want to hear about that one for 15 minutes, do you, Keith?
I need to hear about some hentai bullshit.
It doesn't go inside of him.
You made it sound like it does.
I mean, it went inside of his heart. It did do that.
Yeah, it did. It carved a little octopus.
It did wrap
his
tentacle around his finger.
Yeah.
But just so you know, just to close the loop there. So he hosted the show, finishes at 10 o'clock at night, and then Lionel Richie and everybody who was at the AMAs and involved in this then go to the studio at 10 o'clock at night.
So that's how they got invited. They were in the award show. Basically.
Well, plus they knew he was going to be in town, and so they started saying...
Yeah, you have one of the heads of the award show asking you to do a good thing for other people, and he's already got some... And once you've got a couple of big names involved, it's easy to just be like, hey, Michael Jackson's doing it, Quincy Jones, like...
Right.
You know,
right.
This
Dan
is
Dan Aykroyd.
Thing. Yeah. Well, and Bruce, that one guy. Bruce Springsteen was just kind of like, pass. Danny?
Yeah. You know he's a blues brother.
Yeah, and they interviewed Bruce Springsteen. He actually talks more than most people because he was involved in it from the very beginning. But that dude ended a U.S. tour the day before.
Wow,
he played in Buffalo, and typically his rule is like he ends a tour and then he doesn't fly the next day, or when he performs, he doesn't fly the next day. He ended his U.S. tour and then got on a plane in Buffalo
because this is important. I heard a story. I've been listening. Apparently, Billy Joel was on Howard Stern recently, so there's been a lot of clips.
Yeah, he was there too.
Yeah, and I heard a story from Billy Joel because Howard Stern asked him about the whole documentary coming out. It was like, oh yeah, I was there. Yeah, if you watch the video, sometimes me and Bruce are there singing in the chorus. Sometimes we're not. and he's like, that's because they had this big old craft service table. So sometimes we're there singing. Sometimes we were over there drinking beer and eating sub sandwiches.
dude, it went on until like 6 yeah, o'clock in the right, morning.
Yes, right. It was like it took all that's night. So crazy. Sometimes we were there, sometimes we were eating.
Can you imagine that though? Jet lag or whatever, but like going to an award show and then recording a song.
And it's a lot of personalities.
Yeah. Exactly. But right. and I would, like, if I were a famous person of that ilk in that era, like, I would hope that they weren't so far up their own butts to be like, wow, this is incredible right now, guys. What's happening right now?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And that was how it started. It was like, they're all there excited. They're celebrities. And then Bob Geldof comes in and he's like, so I want you to know why you're doing this.
Bob Geldof comes in and says, what are y'all doing? What's going on, fellas?
He's like, there are people dying in Africa. I know you're here having a good time and everything, but let's not forget.
Hey, Billy Joel, put down the sandwich. Sandwiches are for poor people.
We were going to send those overseas, Billy.
Come on, Billy. You're eating up all the profits. Put that sandwich down.
So getting back to my thing, it's like, okay, that's what I need to know.
Yep.
I am very interested in that whole story and how they came together. I am not an hour, 45 minutes interested.
That's fair.
And you just heard the highlights.
Yeah.
That's brought to you by Documentary Cliff Notes with Craig.
Yes. The new podcast from Small Town News. Lionel Richie, I feel like in a lot of ways he's become, I think it's lessened a little bit now, but there was a time period of maybe about 10, 15 years ago where he was becoming a bit of a punchline.
Lionel Richie?
In terms of celebrity. Yeah, Lionel Richie.
It's because Dancing on the Ceiling.
That was not the best song.
You know, he wasn't really dancing on the ceiling.
I know. What? Have you seen the documentary? That's the making of Dancing on the Ceiling? No, there's a documentary. It's an hour and 45 minutes long.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen was like, what? He's going to be on the ceiling. I'll be on a plane.
I'll tell you what, Dancing on a Ceiling?
That documentary, you got me for 60 seconds.
was he or wasn't he?
Yeah. But the truth is that Lionel Richie, like, even still, of course, like, what an impressive guy, the stuff that he did.
He danced on the ceilings. He also was a blind man with a sculpture. Hello?
Hello? I know what you're referencing.
I think.
Commodore.
What?
He was one of the Commodores.
Oh, he was?
He was in the military, yes.
Wait.
he reached the rank of 64.
He was a Commodore?
He was a Commodore.
I didn't know that.
I'd forgotten that, too. Again, this is documentary knowledge.
Okay. I only need 30 seconds for the whole Commodore thing. I mean, he was in the Commodores. Then
for all of Lionel Richie's career, you get 30 seconds?
No, just the Commodore part.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yes, the documentary is called, Hello, You Got 30 Seconds?
Hello? Is it me you're looking for?
That's now, if someone dies, if there's an unexplained murder, you just bought yourself 60 minutes.
You're talking about like true crime documentaries.
Oh, yeah, I will watch those, but... Once again, there has to be enough intrigue. You know, it's the whole, my problem is like, it's the Dateline conundrum is what it is. Because Dateline will take a very simple.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, don't you hate it when someone takes a really simple murder and drags it out to 45 minutes with commercials?
I mean.
Like Keith Olbermann, man, just like way too much there. It's like, most Saturday nights are normal for people.
Is Keith Olbermann doing those now?
Oh, not Olbermann. What's the other Keith? The other Keith that does. Yeah, that okay, the guy okay, that, okay. that Bill Hader Keith impersonates.
Keith Olbermann does Richards. Political commentary and sports. So, so if it's not an OJ murder, I don't know why.
Don't you hate it? On a typical Saturday night, for most people, I don't know if that. I haven't heard Keith Olbermann in a long time. I'm assuming he talks a little bit out of the side of his mouth.
We watched one that was disappointing called They Called Him Mostly Harmless.
Isn't that most serial killers after the fact?
Right. You think it would be about a serial killer.
Wait, what's it about?
So it's about, there's a guy that was walking the Appalachian Trail, and some people come upon his tent, and he's dead inside, and nobody knows who he is. And so it becomes this internet sleuthing phenomenon where people are trying to find out his identity. And that's what the show's about, is really about that.
Okay.
And they try to figure out who he is.
Wait, you say show. Is this a two-hour documentary? Yes. Okay.
It's a two-hour documentary. And Mostly Harmless was like his trail name. Because apparently he came up on some people and they said, who is it? He said, don't worry, I'm mostly harmless. Exactly.
I know we're alone in the woods here.
Yeah, exactly. And you say, why do you say mostly?
I was gonna say, if you were hiking, that would be both a little bit funny and a little bit alarming.
Yeah. Maybe drop the modifier. Can we just call you harmless just for tonight? But it was really just putting it out there to the world. Who is this guy? Does anybody know who he is? And all these people had run into him on the trail, but nobody knew his real name or his backstory. And so he was this kind of mystery guy that died in the woods alone. And you try to find out what it is. And when you watch a documentary like that for 2 hours.
You want payoff.
You want a payoff.
Yeah. Wait, they don't find out?
They do find out.
Oh.
But it's not much of a payoff.
Well.
Don't you want him to be a serial killer? Well, like he's on the trail, nobody knows his name because he's trying to hide a backstory kind of thing.
Not specifically. I mean, the setup I've been given, I wasn't expecting him to be a serial killer.
He was a software engineer named Reginald who...
Yeah.
Who just got tired of the grind.
Here's a good example. Here's a good example. So there's a channel called Defunctland on YouTube. And this young guy, he mostly talks about Disney-related stuff. But the truth is he's a really good documentarian.
Okay.
And I started watching it as a goof, and it ended up being an absolutely fascinating and amazing hour and a half documentary. This is an hour and a half, and it's enthralling to me.
And you stayed there the whole time.
I did. I watched it. I've watched it twice now. I watched it myself by myself, and then I made Meredith watch it. She didn't think she wanted to, but then like 20 minutes in, she was like, oh my God, what is going on? But it was a documentary. I bet it was supposed to be a 10-minute long thing, but it ended up spiraling out of control. It was supposed to be about who invented or wrote the Disney Channel theme commercial jingle. This little dun 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 dun. He just wanted to find out who wrote that. It's an hour and a half documentary. All the rabbit holes he went down, the people he talked to, the dead ends he met there, and there
Randy Newman.
No, it was no. It's some guy you've never heard of, but there's a twist at the end. When he does find out who it is, and there's a twist that happens at the end, and it becomes this really affirming, wonderful thing about creating art, especially when you never expect it to be something that people hold on to or people appreciate. It's about how art lives on.
And then it becomes this huge Disney thing.
A huge anything. Yeah. A huge anything. Like some spoilers. Like this guy, it was just, he just worked for some big company that did like branding. Mm-hmm. For different companies. Like, I mean, like that's why one of the reasons it took so long, because he was just a cog in this machine. Who would have thought? Like, mm-hmm. You know, it is, no one would have ever thought like this much attention for whatever reason would ever come to him. And, you know, it's a really affirming and really cool thing just about art in all forms and how it can inspire and create it. I found it absolutely fascinating. Your mileage may vary, but it was just one of these things. It's like it started out as one thing and became this bigger, more affirming thing. And maybe that's what ends up happening to the hour and 45 minutes We Are the World thing.
Or the Octopus Girlfriend.
I will never watch that. That's not...
It's a teacher. He learns about life.
Yeah, why can you say Octopus Girlfriend? That's already what's in my head, and that's not what it is. That's why I keep...
Don't you want to know? Don't you want to know and watch it and find out?
The cycle of life. He learns about the cycle of life and how we're all connected.
Yeah, and how to procreate.
And stop that. Okay, Craig keeps almost selling me, and then it's going away.
Maybe we saw different documentaries. What channel was yours on?
He started it, though, because he was disconnected from the world, disconnected from life, trying to find meaning in something. And he found this octopus while he was diving, and he saw this amazing thing, a mystery at the beginning. And he was like, what did I just see? Maybe if I came to this same spot every day for a year... Who knows
she
what
would
I'll
date
find?
Me. No.
She will love me. Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, like those are, and I know I've already talked about my love of like true crime stuff. Lots of true crime, it doesn't work that way. That's just sick, weird pleasure you get from horrible things that have happened. I'll just be honest about it. But that's what a really good documentary does, is that you think it's about one thing, but really it opens up this much larger picture. Those are the best documentaries.
Yeah.
So that sounds interesting. I won't watch it probably.
While we're on movies, Zone of Interest. Watch that.
I've never heard of
it. Yeah, I haven't heard
it's
of it.
It's nominated for Best Picture. But there are 10 of them this year, so you get an excuse.
That means nothing.
So it's we saw it in a theater in Boston, and I think it just started streaming this week. It's a thought that this is a laugh riot, let me just tell you.
Best picture nominees always are.
Yeah. No, I mean, so we were at a concentration camp when we were in Germany, and Dare had this thought. There's a subdivision on the other side of the wall. And she's like, can you imagine living next to this? Hmm. And there was these concentration camps were kind of all over the countryside and all over it. And there were people that lived next to them. So this movie is actually about people that live right next to Auschwitz. it is actually turns out to be the commandant and his family is who it's focused on. But it's very interesting and well done.
What time period is the movie taking place in?
World War II. During, oh, wow. During the thing.
Oh, my
Not modern day.
No, no, no.
Oh, okay.
No, no. It's happening while that's happening. And this guy's in charge of the place.
Oh.
And so, really, they never show anything happening inside the walls.
Yeah.
It's all outside with his family and his children and his in-laws and the parties they have. And the
Which is how it would have been for 99% of Germans.
Right.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. So it's an interesting take on that. It's really well done. I think it's A24 maybe made it. And the sound editing is really good.
Yeah.
Because you're just kind of watching this pool party happen while you're hearing things in the background. No. Really well done.
It sounds really good.
It's really good.
And this kind of comes back to something I was saying earlier. It's hard for me, no matter how good something may be, to motivate myself to watch something I know is going to be like sad.
Or it's true.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
I've never seen. I know it's amazing. I have never seen Schindler's List all the way through.
Yeah.
I have seen the final sequence out of context with just like the real life survivors visiting the grave.
Right.
That alone tore me to pieces.
Right. Right.
Like without everything that came before it, I was crying just watching that. And I'm just like, I can't, I've seen the girl in the red coat sequence. I just, you know, and every time I watch anything from it, it hits me so hard. And
I will say this, you know, it's a good movie without seeing it.
Yeah. Based on what I have seen.
Yes. There are lots of depressing things that happen.
Of course.
But it is such a well-made movie and such a well-acted movie that it doesn't feel like a downer for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It is, and I mean, it's Spielberg. So like he knows how to make an entertaining piece of art,
course.
But also like his heart was in that. So yes, particularly about 45 minutes into it when they go into the ghetto, it's bad.
Yeah.
But when you look at it overall, the acting that everybody puts into it, the way it's shot, it does balance out
of
where
course.
It's not like just a pitfall for 2 hours.
And like I said, my problem is motivating myself to start it.
Yeah.
That's what that is. And that comes with a lot of really dramatic.
Once you start it, you'll love it just from a filming.
Because it'd be a lot easier to just watch Police Academy 9.
Right.
It really.
Whoop, I know there's whoop, not whoop, one.
Whoop. They stopped at 7, Craig.
I know that.
Well, so far.
They should have stopped.
So one thing about this Zone of Interest movie. What's interesting about it is we have the perspective of knowing how awful that was.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
These people that are living in it, and the guy's kind of just doing his job, and his family is just living in a place where dad does his job.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see their different reactions to what is happening and the people that come into their lives and the perspectives that they have versus the people that are living in it day to day. That's what's so interesting, I think, about that movie is it is that different perspective of...
It sounds good. It really does.
Because
it sounds very interesting.
I'm not obviously a sympathizer to Nazis. I'll say that right off the bat. But
well, no, don't use the word but. Don't use the word but. Don't even use the word but.
And, not but, and you know that a lot of them were doing their jobs and it was just what they were doing or being around it. And so that's what's interesting is to have, for them not to have this awareness that where our job is awful.
Right.
And doing it.
You may have been the person who was separating the paintings or the candelabras that have been pillaged, but you don't know what really went into getting those pieces.
Right. Right.
Again, not defending the Nazis.
Not at all. But it's an interesting perspective because
I think that is what makes it such an interesting and dangerous political view of that whole thing is like they were smart people. And they were bested by this whole movement.
Yeah.
And that's partially what's touched on in Cabaret as well, is like it's this slow boil like the frog in the pot, right? It's like it's happening all around you and people didn't realize it. And it was like acceptance in little increments. And then next thing you know, you're doing awful things without...
That's something like some of these true crime stuff I watch where other people are involved. That's always an interesting thing that plays in my mind. It's like, at what point is culpability?
Yes, right.
When does that come into play? Because, that's sometimes horrible things are happening. People don't realize it. But at some point,
you get
a suspicion, you get something. Yeah. And at what point does that, was like, okay, you need to act now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it was best summed up by Bob Dylan in We Are the World when he said, "There's a choice we're making. We're changing our lives."
I think it was summed up best by Quincy Jones when he said, "Billy, Bruce, get away from those sandwiches.
They're not for you." You're not one of the hungry.
I did like you're the world. You're not the world. We are feeding children.
It's not about you.
We know you're hungry. We know you just finished a tour. You got on the plane from Buffalo. You should have brought your own lunch, Bruce.
Cyndi Lauper was there.
I believe that. What was the year?
Did she help write the song? Am I making that
she
up?
She did not help write the song.
Okay.
The song was written.
I looked at Craig, who is the authority on this.
He watched an hour and 45 minutes.
I'll tell you. It was written by Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie.
Okay.
Stevie Wonder didn't do it?
So they wanted Stevie Wonder to help them write it, and he kept not showing up to the sessions. And then when they showed up, that when they went to have their recording, he thought that they were still writing it, and they were like, no, this thing's done. Which leads to another funny moment that happened during the actual recording of the song. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. People are getting tense.
And all the sandwiches are gone.
All the sandwiches are gone.
Billy and Bruce ate them all.
Sidebar on that, there was one moment where Ray Charles needed to go to the bathroom and he didn't know where it was. And Stevie Wonder said, I'll show you. And literally, Stevie Wonder took him. And
the somebody, blind leading
and,
the blind.
And somebody made the joke that the blind was, and they all laughed about like it broke the tension in the night.
Yeah. But,
so they were still writing the song the night they were recording it?
They were not. But because Stevie Wonder had missed out on the process.
He was trying to incorporate.
He still had ideas.
And when you've got that many people in a room, like, that's when Quincy Jones had to put his producer hat on and be like, Hey, this is done. Yeah, we got to keep everybody on track here.
Yeah, like we literally have tonight.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah. You need a producer. You need somebody in charge.
That's what he was doing. And he was great at it. He really was. And especially like because they go through the Bob Dylan part too, which we've all seen the memes of that, of like Bob Dylan and We Are the World. He like sitting there, like looks like he's lost, right?
I assume he always looks like that.
Yeah. I never watched it. Like he wanted to help, but he didn't know where he fit into this whole thing. He's got all these amazing singers around him that can just do harmonies on the fly and
anything.
Yeah. And he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing.
How do I fit into this?
I mean, really.
Why am I here?
Yeah. And so they're recording the solos and then it gets to his and he's just like like he's obviously like self-conscious, embarrassed, doesn't know what to do. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, Bob.
And then he says, Stevie, can you help me on this, on the piano again? Just, I'm trying to find it. Stevie Wonder was so graceful about it. And Quincy Jones was like, yeah, that's great, man. And they went over to the piano. And because Stevie Wonder's amazing, he was able to play exactly the parts that they wanted Bob Dylan to sing. And so Bob Dylan was able to find it on the piano.
Okay.
And then go back over and sing it.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And from what I could tell in the movie, it was like one take. And Quincy Jones was like, that's great, man.
That's great. Perfect. Nailed it.
I know how lightning works. All right. Okay. Well, that's 15 minutes worth spent. That's good. Is there a twist, though? Like, then a body shows up?
No, it was an octopus.
The octopus has a terrible solo. They cut that out completely. The thing is every time they cut the octopus solo out, it kept growing back.
So that's what kills about some of these Netflix documentaries. They'll be like the 4-part documentaries. Every stinking time, man, you're about to get to the end of that first hour and just be like, you know, yes. It was at that point everything seemed completely normal, except for this one thing. Credits.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Where is mom? Pong. You know. Now, I got to know what happened to Mom.
Nobody even knew an episode 2 was around the corner.
Maybe it was Tiger King. I don't remember what it was, but there was some documentary that me and Meredith were watching. And
oh, yeah. It was Tiger
we
King.
Knew we were getting to the end of each part because we sit there going like, wait a minute. Everything seems like it's wrapping up. And I know there's at least 2 more. What? I think we watched Tiger King in one night.
Yeah.
Because we just couldn't.
Yeah. Justin and I watched it in 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a COVID binge.
Yeah. For sure. We did not mean to.
Yeah.
It just happened. Same with that Fire Festival documentary. There were 2 competing documentaries. Yeah. Watched them both in the same night.
Yep. You know, that's coming back.
What? Oh, doing another Fire Festival. What? Oh, my God.
We should go.
We should totally go. We should host it.
We should do a documentary
right here,
about it.
Right now.
Are the proceeds going to go to Feed Africa?
Probably not.
No. Oh, okay.
Probably pay legal bills.
No, it's to give fire to Africa.
FYRE.
I or Y.
FYRE.
Ah, they don't need it. We don't need it.